Wake up, Daddy, wake up. I was fully clothed and slick with sweat. The sofa faced the big picture window of our West Side apartment, which looked across Central Park. While I'd been sleeping it off, my body had been cooking in the glare of the summer sun as it rose over the east side. I came to slowly, incrementally piecing together fragments of my present situation. Sam, my 3-year-old son, my baby boy whom I loved so much, was at that moment nothing more than a giant gnat, climbing all over me, buzzing in my ear, irritating me into consciousness. I sat up painfully and positioned him beside me on the couch. I resisted fully opening my eyes. The room was too bright. My fuzzy gaze went to the carpet, where a Coors tall boy lay, no doubt toppled over hours ago by a flopping arm. I used it as a point of focus to orient myself. A damp stain in the rug fanned out from the hole at the top of the can. Then I saw feet. Tracy's feet. The feet had on shoes. Shit, what time was it? She was probably on her way to the theater for Saturday's matinee. I'd slept all morning. Been passed out all morning, more like it. When I finally summoned the courage to look in her face, I found no expression of rage. Here was something far more disturbing. She was meeting my sorry state with a calmness approaching boredom. No, it was worse than boredom. It was indifference. "I have to go to the theater," she said flatly. "Listen," I stammered. "Last night..." "I don't want to hear it," Tracy said, still eerily calm. She turned for the door and then looked back, fixing me with another look. "Is this what you want?" she said. "This is what you want to be." It wasn't a question. And then she was out the door. My hands started to tremble, but not just from some fucking brain disease. I'd never been so frightened in my life. Hitting bottom is a term recovering alcoholics often use. It describes a place of physical, emotional, and spiritual despair that they had brought themselves to in pursuit of their next drink, a moment of realization that to slip any lower would be unbearable. At least as far as my drinking career was concerned. That morning on the sofa, I hit bottom. I was lucky. Compared to the experience of others who'd battled alcohol, mine was a pretty soft landing. You hear stories of utter financial ruin, horrendous car wrecks, injury, and death. Prison sentences, wrecked marriages, degradation, and humiliation far beyond anything I'd ever experienced. But as long as I continued to drink, any one of those fates could have been mine. I couldn't do anything about PD, but alcohol was different. Here, at least, I had a choice, and that day I made it. Helping me to make that choice was the first thing I'd actually be grateful to Parkinson's for. Tracy was between the Saturday matinee and the evening show when I reached her on the phone. I offered a sheepish hi, and she responded with a noncommittal hello. I realized that the deadly pause that followed was all mine to fill. And this is what came out of my mouth. "I'm sorry. I just wanted to say that I have a drinking problem, and I'm ready to quit. If you know somebody I could talk to..." "Stay by the phone," she said quickly. And before she hung up, "I love you." Within minutes, the phone rang again. "Hi, Mike," said a female voice I recognized immediately, a good friend to both Tracy and me. It suddenly dawned on me that while we'd had dinner with this woman many times, I'd never once seen her take a drink, not even a glass of wine. "Tracy tells me you think you finally had enough." "Yeah," I said. A brief conversation followed, a feeling-out session in which she asked a few questions and seemed convinced by my answers that I did indeed need help and was ready to accept it.